Anyone who's ever had a child knows you have a lot of dreams for them.
You will be a lawyer and make the mega buck. You'll support your mommy when she's down on her luck. You will read.
Anyone sane knows that the dream of having a perfect baby and being a perfect mother is just that, a dream. And yet, sociologist Susan Douglas argues that dream is oppressing millions of American women and rolling back three decades of feminist progress. Douglas teaches communication studies at the University of Michigan. She's written several previous books on women and mass media. Now, with co-author Meredith Michaels, she's published The Mommy Myth. It's a scathing critique of what Douglas calls the new momism. Steve Paulson asked her to explain.
The new momism is a highly romanticized, utterly demanding myth of the perfect mother, in which the standards for success are impossible to achieve. The new momism dictates that mothers devote their entire physical, psychological, emotional, and intellectual being 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to their kids.
So that means signing them up for every conceivable lesson, piano lessons, swimming lessons, soccer lessons, and the list goes on.
The to-do list is amazing, and it's about not only building a better kid, it's also about building the perfect kid. And I think this comparison proves pretty striking for people. If we take June Cleaver as the exemplar of the doting suburban 1950s mom, even June Cleaver was not expected to pipe Mozart into her womb so that the beaver came out perfectly tuned. June Cleaver was not expected to drill the beaver with flashcards when he was 6 months old. She wasn't expected to hook him up to a computer when he was two and teach him pre-algebra. I don't recall June Cleaver ever driving the beaver 10 hours round trip to a soccer match or building a fun house for him, you know, out in the backyard out of bird's eye maple, and so on and so forth. So even June Cleaver could not meet the standards that have gone through the roof for today's mother.
And this is pretty ironic considering that we have been through the women's movement, and the women's movement was to some degree all about rejecting the June Cleaver lifestyle.
Well, one of the things that we do in the book is go back to the 1970s and remind people what the women's movement actually did try to do about motherhood. There have been a lot of misrepresentations of feminists that they were anti-family, anti-kid. You go back and look at the magazines, it was feminists who were trying to get better daycare for kids. It was feminists who argued that homemakers' work was undervalued and deserved to be more highly valued. It was feminists who insisted that fathers become more involved in the raising of kids. And I have to say, going back, which I did for the book, to look at some of the magazines from the 70s and seeing where we are today, God, it's almost like the women's movement didn't happen. You know, there's been such amnesia about that. And women have come a long way, don't get me wrong. But motherhood remains the unfinished business of the women's movement. And when you look at what has happened in motherhood since the 1980s, there's been a real move backward.
When you say it's the unfinished business of the women's movement, what do you mean?
There was a very good book written a couple of years ago by Anne Crittenden called The Price of Motherhood, which I highly recommend. And in it, Anne Crittenden documented how much it cost women to have children, how much it cost them in terms of their careers, all the rest. And what she found is that women who didn't have children, who were in certain professions and lines of work, for the most part, you know, were on a par with their male counterparts. Once they had kids, it was a different story. It's because once we have children, it is expected that mothers remain the best and often only, you know, primary caretakers of children, that we are the ones who have to do everything. We are supposed to sacrifice everything. And if you put the same demands that are on mothers today, on fathers, you would see how unequal it remains and how absurd these standards are.
Now, it sounds like you are essentially defending women who have mothers who have made the choice to devote themselves mainly to their careers and kind of this long simmering debate between stay-at-home moms and working mothers, that you're coming down on the side of working mothers.
The book is really opposed to the so-called mommy wars. The mommy wars, which stage some catfight, right, between stay-at-home mothers and working mothers, as if we have nothing in common, are mutually exclusive categories, and allegedly hate each other, is such a red herring. Are there sometimes tensions between stay-at-home mothers and working mothers? Sure there are. Have they been exaggerated totally out of proportion to sell magazines and to sell TV shows? You bet. You know, I'm a working mother. I know plenty of stay-at-home mothers. You know what? We schlep our kids around all the time. We look out after each other's kids. We cooperate and help each other. You know, we all care about the same things.
Now, it seems to me the other piece of this is how parenting, mothering in particular, has been idealized, and the image that if only you could spend every waking moment of your life in the company of your children, wouldn't things be wonderful? But of course, any parent knows that that's not true. That there are times when you would do just about anything to get away from your kids because they're driving you crazy. And there are other times when it's wonderful. It's not an either or.
That's right. And I think, you know, a lot of this has come from the rise of the dreaded celebrity mom profile. We all know these profiles. There you are at the supermarket checkout counter with a couple of kids screaming, you know, by your side. And there is on the cover of People or In Style or Red Book or whatever, some celebrity with her miracle baby telling you that motherhood is sexy. Now, I looked at the covers of women's magazines from 1975 to the present. I looked at Red Book, Good Housekeeping, Ladies Home Journal, and McCall's. And I will tell you that in the 1970s, there were hardly ever any celebrity mom profiles on the cover of these magazines. There might be one a year. You know, Princess Grace talks about the troubles of being a mother, right? That was it. By the late 1980s, celebrity mom profiles accounted for 1/5 to 1/4 of the covers of women's magazines. They were everywhere. And there they were with their perfect hair, their perfect makeup, their perfect kid. The kid was perfectly made up. You went inside. There was the perfect husband, the perfect house with bizarrely white furniture and white shag rugs. And what I found pernicious about these when I was the mother of an infant was not only were they telling you everything they did, you know, reading stories to them every night, doing somersaults with them in the park whenever they wanted, so on and so forth, that were going to ensure that that child be a Nobel laureate by the age of 12, they told you how you were supposed to feel. And in these celebrity mom profiles, the mothers were always eternally joyful and ecstatic, you know. Now, I think it made a difference that, you know, they were interviewed right after they had their infant and, you know, before the kid was in rehab, you know.
But of course, you also know that these celebrity moms have plenty of help. I mean, they've got housekeepers. I'm sure they've got people to look after the kids. They're not doing this all by themselves.
Well, interestingly, for the regular mothers who do not have a SWAT team of nannies or a French chateau or the joyful outlook that goes with both, mothers know this, and plenty of us, you know, talk back to these profiles. And in fact, back in 2000, I believe it was, Cindy Crawford had her first child, and this was a huge cover story for People magazine, giant headlines, boy, oh boy. Well, 2 weeks later, People got what appeared to be, you know, a cartload of mail from mothers saying, excuse me, yes, Cindy Crawford looks gorgeous after having her baby, and yes, she's relaxed and joyful because she's got a personal assistant, a nanny, so on and so forth. So yes, we mothers talk back to this stuff. But I have to say that even though on a cognitive, intellectual level, we talk back to this stuff, these standards of perfection and joy get so atomized into the mist of the media that surrounds us that it seems like a common sense that even if we can talk back to it, we still fear that other people are judging us by these standards. So it worms its way in there anyway.
Well, and my sense is that there are some things that are okay to talk about with other parents, other mothers. For instance, you know, you're having a bad day and it's just frustrating. But to really say, you know, I just can't stand my kid right now. I just need to get away. You're kind of walking on thin ice there.
You are. And this is why we miss Irma Bombeck so much, because if you remember her books, they were hilarious on this score and they made fun of perfect motherhood. Nobody doubted for a minute reading these Irma Bombeck books and her columns that she loved her kids, right? And yet she was able to say things like, God, today I'm going to bury that kid in the septic tank, you know. And it was funny, but mothers also recognized the kernel of truth in it. And, you know, I am a mother of a 15-year-old. And those of us who have teenagers know that one day is wonderful. They're great. You know, they're so interesting. They're exploding in all kinds of ways. The next day, they hate you and they tell you so about 15 times a day. They won't talk to you. They snub you. It's not joyful. It's hard. Do you want to get away from that? Yeah. You know, but we don't have permission to say so. Being a mother for me, I think, is the hardest thing I've ever done. I adore my kid. I think she's fabulous. It has had multiple fabulous, joyful moments. But it has also been exasperating, frustrating, and boring. Why do we not have permission to say that?
Susan Douglas is the co-author with Meredith Michaels of The Mommy Myth, The Idealization of Motherhood, and How It Has Undermined Women. Steve Paulson spoke with her.